Radio City, John Grayson and Rob Ross hanging out with you again because we kind of dig you. So we figured we'd do this nice little show and you could listen and just hang out with us for a while. Rob, how's everything in New York?
It isn't bad. It was magnificent today. It's been a good week by and large. It's been really beautiful in New York. Yeah, it was a little rainy during the weekend, but it's nice because it cooled things down. And you know, last week when we spoke, I even said that this was going to be the weekend of attrition where I'd have to do man work.
Yeah, right.
And install air conditioners and take the car for the seasonal oil change. Well, I didn't take the car on Saturday because I'm a lazy bastard. But no sooner than I spoke to you on Monday, Tuesday, it was so hot yet again. I gave up the ghost and put the ACs in, and boy, did that feel good.
Oh, I'll bet.
Oh, yeah. So I feel more than manly. And speaking of the close of our last conversation, this is our jumping off point for tonight. No sooner than we hung up with one another, Barry Trotz resigned from the Washington Capitals.
Right.
And is now the coach, as we suspected, of the New York Islanders.
Yeah, which is huge news in the NHL. I mean, not only the fact that he comes off of a team that got, that accomplished what they did this year, but the fact that, he's a guy who had a tremendous amount of success in Nashville and obviously had a tremendous amount of success in Washington. So now he moves into an Islanders team that has struggled mightily for a very long time. So where does he start? I mean, the Isles had a pretty good draft, too, which is nice to see.
The Isles had I think the Isles were the winners of the draft, whereas my Rangers, along with everyone else, I'm scratching my head trying to understand why they made the draft picks that they picked, especially in the position that they were in to pick. I mean, they had, first of all, three number one picks.
Yep.
Or I should say three first round picks. Second of all, they were in, I think, either eighth or ninth place with, in that first go around. And why they picked the player that they did, a Russian kid who is at least, if we're lucky, 2 years away from NHL playing. Although, and I'm going to say this as a very, very long-standing, long-suffering Rangers fan, their picks over the last, I'd say, 15 years have been, by and large, busts. All those first-round picks have been busts. From Hugh Jessamine to Bobby Sanguinetti, they've all gone nowhere. So this Russian kid, I don't know how and or why they picked him. Forget that. We're not talking about the Rangers. We're talking about the Islanders, who had a great day, at the picks. They picked well. They picked wisely. I think Trotz is coming into a very good situation. You've got a top-notch general manager like Lou Lamoriello, who took – the New Jersey Devils and made them into hockey's version of the Borg. Anytime you took out one player from that system,
just plug somebody in.
And they were still up there. And once Lamoriello left, they started going downhill rapidly. That's number one. So he's coming in with a very young Islanders team. He's a very good judge of talent. The only piece left to the puzzle now is signing John Tavares again. And I know that Tavares's agent has said that they're going to entertain, I think, five or six interviews, quote unquote, with other teams. The Rangers are not amongst those teams. The only two places I feel that would make the most sense for Tavares to go are either, back to the Islanders, which I think he will do.
Okay.
Or the Toronto Maple Leafs, simply because he's from Toronto. San Jose is considered, quote unquote, a big favorite in this sweepstakes, but I don't see him going to the San Jose Sharks, A, because that's an older team. That's number one.
Right.
Who can't seem to get over the hump, and I don't see Tavares as being the guy plugged into that particular system to get them where they need to go. I just don't see it. I don't see San Jose becoming a Stanley Cup Finals team for at least another two or three years. I hate to say it.
Right.
They're always on the cusp, but always come up short. So it's either going to be Toronto if he were to move or staying with the Islanders, and I think he stays with the Islanders. The other thing that I found really interesting was that Lamoriello would not make any trades on draft day, even though he was made some very, very needy offers. He didn't want to part with those picks. So the draft itself, and I'm sure you're overjoyed that Buffalo took the number one pick.
Rasmus Dahlin, sure.
Right. How can you not love a guy named Rasmus, first of all? Second of all, he was the number one pick across the board.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, this is a blue chip, can't miss, ready to play now kind of guy.
Exactly. And, you know,
I'm flummoxed as to why the Rangers didn't go with that American kid who was available and could have been had for the asking.
Right. Yeah. Well, and with Dahlin, I mean, he goes into a system now where it's kind of ready made for him. I mean, first of all, it's going to take some pressure off of Jack Eichel for being the only star on the team. And he's finally going to have somebody who knows how to set him up. I mean, that was, you know, Dahlin's real strength is assists, and Eichel's real strength is putting the puck in the net. So, you know, if they can stay together and they can work out some kind of decent chemistry, then yeah, it portends good things.
And it's a young team. See, that's what I prefer, right? A young team as to this hodgepodge of, like, here's a perfect example. A, who gives a damn? And B, why would Los Angeles spend the money to bring back 37-year-old Kovalchuk? I mean, come on. First of all, he's a tempestuous kind of guy.
Right.
He made that clear when he forced a trade from Atlanta, which in effect destroyed that franchise in Atlanta, to go to the Devils, only to screw the Devils and go play in the KHL. Oh, now you're dissatisfied with the KHL, so you're back again?
Right.
I'm just very glad that the Rangers didn't do the stupid thing and make a bid for him. That's all I can say. Wow, we dodged a bullet there. Yay.
Yeah, but now it's the long summer doldrums where all we've got is baseball and we're just sitting there white-knuckling it until NFL preseason starts. But then, you know, hockey's right on the heels of that.
Yeah, but brother, I got nothing to look forward to in baseball because the Mets find new ways to lose games every night.
I mean,
they got swept by the Dodgers yesterday in an 11-inning affair that they came back. They were down, I think it was 5-3. They took the lead. They were down again. I think it was at a point. No, it was they were down 7-4 and came back and tied the game only to lose it in 11. Right now they're down 3-0 to Pittsburgh. I mean, it's just insanity. I am beyond perplexed, and it's so, so troubling, and it makes me really, really sad. So, because no one can understand it. You know, it's a team of good players. They're certainly not a subpar team, but they're playing like the Florida Marlins. They're playing like the Cincinnati Reds, you know.
Right.
Well, that's rapidly becoming one of the worst teams in the world.
Yeah, and you look at what's going on here in town, and I mean the Cardinal fans are having just the same kind of tough time you are, and it's the reasons are something that Cardinal fans haven't had to deal with in a long time, because I heard a really fascinating conversation on my own radio station this morning about this. It's centered around the fact that, you know, they've been injury plagued, and yeah, they have, and they're not just losing second and third line guys. I mean, they're losing star players. Yadier Molina was out for weeks, and that's not going to help you. But most of the injuries have been more defensive players than offensive players, and it's the offense where they're losing games 3-1, 3-2, 2-1, and they just can't seem to come up with any offense. They had a really good outing this weekend in Milwaukee, but they beat up on the Brewers fairly regularly anyway. So, you know, it's not like that's going to, that again, was it a nice weekend? Was it good to see the Cardinals pile up a couple of wins? Yeah, it was. But does it mean that anybody is any more optimistic about this week than we were about last week? Nope.
Well, then we can all suffer in silence and try and find something else to occupy our time with. You know?
Yes, indeed. and to that end, by the way, and another sad goodbye, and this one comes out of my own industry. And, you know,
Dan Ingram.
Yeah, I know Dan Ingram only by reputation, but you talk about a guy who was an absolute giant in pop radio for how many years? 5 decades or more? And, you know, at 83 years old, just steps out. And what a great career. And to see the love. See, again, this goes back to what you and I always talk about when we get nostalgic about radio. When you hear the outpouring, I mean, people telling stories about something that happened in 1974 when they were listening to Dan Ingram on the air, you know, and they remember his voice being a part of that day.
Listen, once I start, you're not going to be able to stop me because that was such a staple of my entire childhood.
Yeah.
You know, we listened religiously to 77 WABC, and it was basically all of the guys who had come from the Good Guys and from WINS and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, but by the way, the good guys were WNCA. But it was always Harry Harrison, Ron Lund. Hello, love. This is Ron Lundy, followed immediately by Dan Ingram.
Yep.
Followed by your cousin Brucey. You know, those are the guys I grew up with, and it was religion in the household and in the car.
Yeah.
How many times have you and I waxed poetic and eloquent about the time spent as children in the car listening to all those great pop singles and singing along with everything that we heard on ABC radio?
Right. And the difference was that you could tell, you know, I had a conversation years ago with, of all people, Weird Al. And we were talking about the fact that to do what he does, you have to love pop music so much. You have to want to bathe in it. You have to make it part of everything that you do. And that's what we learned from those guys. That's what those disc jockeys told us, is how to love it. Because it was clear that they did, you know, and nobody got to that level. Nobody got to that level of fame as a jock without really having a great love for the music and loving what we always talk about, which is bringing us something new.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's why we do what we do.
Right.
In this for this generation, as it were, or at least for our generation, because what we're doing is we're communicating with our friends and contemporaries.
Yep.
Really. That's what this is all about. And, you know, this is a natural thing. And with those guys, you know, that's why they were disc jockeys. They wrote those songs.
Yeah.
They wrote the music. They made the music. They pushed the music. That was their whole thing, their love of breaking new sounds at a time when you could do that. Because the pop charts that we grew up with were so different, you know? Like you and I joked about with the, you know, the biggest songs of 1966, you know? Those songs were as different as night and day, but yet you could do that.
Right.
You know, or in the 70s when Dan Ingram was on ABC radio, you know, it wasn't untoward to hear, listen to what the man said, followed by, hello, it's me, followed by, I don't know, we've only just begun, and then followed by Energy Crisis 74 by Dickie Goodman.
Yeah, right.
That's how it went. That was the beauty of radio when we were growing up and guys like Dan Ingram. So that is a huge, huge loss in our youth. But you know what? We still have Harry Harrison, even though he's not, you know, on the radio anymore. And we still have Cousin Brucey out there.
Yeah.
Still doing his thing, even at 80-something. God bless him.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, not only that, the guy that I grew up with, Danny Nevereth on WKBW in Buffalo, who started on WBNY, I think, many years before that, but was that same kind of staple of pop radio in town. He just turned 80, and I read that as of like November of last year, he was back on doing a Friday afternoon oldies show. And it's because they still love it. You know, Cousin Brucey, you can hear it. Every time I've talked to Cousin Brucey, it has been a giant love fest. You can't stop the guy from talking about it.
I listen. You know what? I actually listen to his Saturday night show on XM.
Yep.
If I'm in the car in the evening, because it's still just as much fun now as it was then.
Right.
Even starting off with the Cousin Brucey theme,
yep,
you know, that sounds like the Four Seasons doing the song. You know, and in fact, when we were in Memphis, who was there at Graceland doing his show? And there he was in front of us in 90-degree weather wearing that godforsaken V-neck sweater.
Right.
And the rug.
Cousin Brucey.
Bruce Morrow, God love him. You know, all those guys from ABC Radio, those were my guys. That's who I grew up with. You know, we had, like I said so many times, we had a very musical household. So, you know, before they switched formats to country music, we listened to WHN. We had Herb Oscar Anderson in the morning, who had started as, you know, on one of the other stations. I think he was either with WINS or WMCA. Maybe, no, actually, I think he might have been on ABC with those guys, replaced by Harry Harrison. But we had, you know, HOA on WHN. We had Harry Harrison, Ron Lundy. Those were my guys, period.
Yeah.
That's why you knew all of those guys point blank. If you moved over to FM radio, which we didn't often do, but my dad liked the oldie stuff, and I never liked doo-wop crap, but my father dug that stuff. So we would listen to the then new oldie station, WCBS 101 FM, and Jack Spector, who was one of the original good guys, was on, you know, CBS FM, where all the ABC guys eventually wound up. You know, the same way that they were on ABC, it was still Harry Harrison, Ron Lundy, and Dan Ingram, all to, and Cousin Brucey in that lineup.
Same lineup, yeah. Right, because yeah. It just worked.
Afternoon, evening, and night.
And that's funny because I also rarely listened to FM radio back then, and it was also because of my dad, but it was the exact opposite direction. Rather than listening to doo-wop, Dad was listening to CFNY out of, I believe they were out of Toronto. It might have been Mississauga, somewhere in Ontario. But he was listening to them because they were the ones that carried shit like the King Biscuit Flower Hour. And they were the only station that played Frank Zappa. He loved Zappa. They were playing the Grateful Dead. You know, he was all over that part of FM radio in the mid 70s.
See, and I got to that when my cousin Mark turned me on to rock music proper when he educated me.
Right.
And then suddenly, well, because he also wanted to be Scotzo. That's what he wanted to be. He wanted to be Scott Muni.
Yeah.
And who had come from ABC radio also.
There you go.
And you know, it was around the mid 70s, you know, and when Mark was done, you know, shitting all over everything we like Queen and Wings, and you know, of course, he was a big Jethro Tull fan, which I will never let him live down. But you know, he did turn me on to the more important rock music. He never denigrated me for the Todd Rundgren, Harry Nilsson, Badfinger stuff.
Sure,
but everything else was.
Well, good music's just good music. And not to go off on a weird tangent here, but I'm going to anyway, because you brought up the specter of Dickie Goodman. And you're going to have to remind me, did he have a single between Energy Crisis 74 and Mr. Jaws, or were they back-to-back?
They were kind of back-to-back.
It was a couple of years apart, but yeah.
Right, like basically a year and a half apart. But Dickie Goodman was also the one who did Martian Hop.
Right.
Which was what? 11 years previously or 12 years previously?
I was going to say, yeah, that had to be 1961, 62.
62? Yeah, the Rondells? Was that the name of the supposed group that did the Martian Hop?
Yes. Right. And of course, I mean, without him, without Dickie Goodman, we wouldn't have Fair Use. That was all decided because of his stuff, because he got sued. And I don't remember, it may very well have been that, but he got sued for using you know, clips of other people's songs and stuff.
Right.
And he was the one that won the lawsuit that said you can use up to 30 seconds and that's fair use and that's okay. So
right, because I mean, I remember Energy Crisis 74 using Hell in Wheels by Wings, which is a fucking amazing song.
Right.
Who do you believe the gas shortage will affect most? Mr. President, the crisis must be solved. What do you intend to do? With me now is the head of the Federal Energy Office. Sir, you hold an important position. What are your qualifications?
I'm a joker. I'm a smoker. I'm a midnight toker.
That was that stretch run of singles where McCartney was just untouchable. And I mean untouchable.
And he was playing everything.
Right. I mean, you could make the argument, no, the singles really started with High.
Right.
But I don't know, because after High came Mary Had a Little Lamb. Or Give Ireland Back to the Irish. There was like three singles that it was the three singles of 1972 were High, Mary Had a Little Lamb, Give Ireland Back to the Irish. You know, two of those songs got banned. So I think it was Mary Had a Little Lamb came after High, because certainly Give Ireland Back to the Irish got banned right off the airwaves.
Right. And what was it? Where was Coming Up and all of that?
That's 1980. So that's way after. So just to give the chronological point. After Mary Had a Little Lamb came My Love. Now, My Love is a masterpiece. No, actually, Live and Let Die was next.
Okay.
And I don't care for Live and Let Die. But then, okay, I think I got this right. It's My Love, Hell in Wheels, Jet, Band on the Run, Junior's Farm, Listen to What the Man Said.
Right.
I'm not going to qualify Venus and Mars because it's edited.
Well, not to mention with Band on the Run, that was backed with 1985.
Right. And Jet was backed with Mamounia on the original American release.
Yep.
It was later switched to the same one around the world. That was Around the World, and that's Let Me Roll It. But that's six in a row where McCartney was fucking untouchable.
Right. Not bad. Not a bad record at all.
But anyway, so Energy Crisis 74 had, you know, it had Jet, Helen Wheels, it had Hello, It's Me. I mean, it was just this great, great collage of songs. I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And yet it's so funny. You know?
I was trying to remember. So Mr. Jaws had Think We Can Make It. And what's the one? Oh shit! The song
that wouldn't you give your hand to a friend?
That's it. Yeah, I think we can make it. Wouldn't you give your hand a wave? And the what was the other? Oh shit! The one with Big Boys Don't Cry with the whispering.
Oh, 10cc.
Right.
He's coming straight for us. Captain Quint is shouting something at him.
Get your baby one of these nights.
Hey Jaws! The captain says he's going to catch you. What do you think of that? Uh-oh, here he comes again. They've hit him. Mr. Jaws, why doesn't anything seem to hurt you?
Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry.
That was in there, and oh, man. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that stuff now.
Yeah, so am I.
Oh, too much. But yeah, it was just fun, you know, and that was the thing. Is I remember spinning those singles when I was in, fourth grade. Whenever we had a day where the teacher just didn't
bring in records.
Yeah, didn't feel like doing anything. We could bring in our own records and just, yep. You know, sit there and spin records. And it was great.
Ugh, yep.
Too much fun.
Same thing. I mean, I always seem to be suddenly very popular because I'd bring in things like Bad, Bad Leroy Brown.
Right.
Or Superstitious, or Living for the City.
Yeah. Well, the first time I ever heard Hotel California was in that school, in the gym, the cafetorium, as they were getting ready for a dance, and we were just putting up tables and chairs and all of that stuff, and some kid brought in the album Hotel California and started playing that song, and we must have made him play it 7 times in a row.
Man, when that album came out, I just would not forgive my mother because she just would not stop playing it. She played it night and day.
Yep.
Especially New Kid in Town, which I really, to this day, I don't like that song. Love the Eagles, but I don't like that song.
Yeah, I think that's the weakest one on that record.
Yeah, I mean, Hotel California itself is fine. But, you know, and of course, Life in the Fast Lane is a great song.
Right.
But we're not going to go off on an Eagles tangent. That's all there is to it. So,
all right. Well, so if that's the case, let's get away from music entirely then and talk about the two stories that have been dominating the press because, well, one of them means something, but of course that's the one that's playing second fiddle right now, which is the fact that Donnie Dipshit's trade war has now cost us very likely a lot of the production facilities for Harley-Davidson motorcycles because
right.
They're talking about opening plants overseas now because the tariffs now that were retaliatory after we decided to put tariffs on steel and aluminum would raise the price of each bike $2,200. And Harley said, nobody in Europe's going to buy them. We can't do that.
No comment. I mean, that sums it up right there. They're being logical, profit driven. And you know what? Do what you need to do.
Right.
Keep that company alive.
But see, right, exactly. But the thing is, I mean, the reason that he gave for his tariff package in the first place is, it's going to make it fairer for everybody and there will be more jobs coming back to America. Bullshit. No, there won't. In fact, there will be more leaving.
This sounds typically like, you know, Trump Industries and why they went bankrupt how many times.
Right. Because he doesn't know anything.
No, he's a moron.
Right.
And there, you know, we could sit around and we can come up with all the hyperbole we want and all the insults. But the guy is a moron. But I have said he's a moron since I first saw him and heard him back in 1980, whatever.
Right.
That's why I've always hated him. He's a dick. There are some people in this world who are dicks. He's a dick. Now, speaking of dicks, Sarah fucking Handlebars.
Which is okay. The other story that's been dominating all stinking weekend long.
So Tubby waddles into this restaurant and sits her fat, stupid, lame ass down and gets told to leave because they don't want her in the restaurant.
Because she is who she is.
She's a fucking asshole.
Yep.
And the problem with that is what?
Nothing.
I don't give a shit if she was a Democrat. She's a dick.
Right.
Like her boss.
Well, and people have...
You know what? People, you know what? It's a public restaurant. And therefore, if people are not going to be comfortable and it's going to drive out the clientele if she stays there,
yep.
Then why would you, you know, why, you know, this is one of those episodes of the quote, for the greater good.
Yeah.
Well, it's that simple.
And they, you know, they weren't nasty to her. They didn't come up and start screaming at her and telling her, get out of here. She took her aside into another room where nobody could hear what they were talking about and said, look, here's the situation. These are my clientele. This is my staff. We ask everybody. They don't want you here. So we're going to have to ask you to leave. And she, to her credit, didn't make a scene either and just walked out the door and took her party with her. You know, and that was really the end of the incident until, of course, she and the president both decided to take to Twitter over all of this shit.
Right. Because they're assholes.
Yep.
See, this is what assholes do. You know,
right.
That's what makes them assholes. It isn't their political stripes. It's their personalities. And this is what people are losing sight of whenever they go on their little, not little, their endless, you know, spewing of verbiage, you know, and tirades, because, of course, they all get off track and all get off topic. Well, no matter what your political leanings are, if you're an asshole of a human being, you're going to do shit that's going to just basically piss everybody off. Like you just said, that was the end of the incident. She took to Twitter along with her dipshit boss to make it into something that it really didn't have to become.
Right.
It's that simple. Folks need to be able to look at things in perspective again, and nobody wants to do that. Nobody's willing to step up to the plate and say, you know, I think we're getting a little out of hand here and a little too loony for our own good. You know what? She's an asshole. And how about this? She's intolerable. So why tolerate the intolerable? It's kind of like letting the neo-Nazis have their say. Sometimes you have to be intolerant of the intolerable.
Right.
And nobody seems to get that concept either.
No, and you look at the hypocrisy that's involved in all of this, and you have a group of people who have been saying, no, Hobby Lobby shouldn't have to pay for their employees' birth control, and because it's their corporation, it's against their beliefs, and no, those cake bakers shouldn't have to make the cake for the gay wedding because it's against their beliefs. But as soon as it's one of them, all of a sudden it's not free enterprise anymore. It's the intolerant left. Fuck off.
Right. Right. It's just mass hypocrisy of the worst kind across the board,
right,
on both sides.
Well,
I mean, look.
But the difference is, and I mean, it's subtle, but it's there and it's important. The difference is Sarah Sanders was thrown out of that restaurant because of her own behavior. She was thrown out of that restaurant because she acts the way that she does. And, you know, if I was in Los Angeles and a week after Mel Gibson made his little, you know, the Jews start all the wars in the world rant on the side of the road and went off on the cop and called her sugar tits or whatever, if he walked into my...
Wait a second. You're going to tell me you don't call every chick out there, every skirt, sugar tits?
Yeah, well, you know, that's not me, though. But
it's just out in the living room right now.
Yeah, right. But, you know, if he had walked into my restaurant a week after he pulled that shit, I'd have kicked his ass out, too, because of who he is and what he does.
Yeah, but you're a Jew, and that's...
Right. Well, you know, Tim Allen, Bon Jovi, same thing. I'd kick all of their asses out. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's an individual, and that's her behavior, and it's what she's done and what she continues to do. They're not kicking out an entire group of people based on who they are. That's the difference.
Whether we like it or not, if you have a company and I'm going to use the term loosely, clearly have rules stated for your employees of do's and don'ts, unfortunately, you do have the discretion to dismiss them or... You know, have again certain rules. Look, if I have a company and I say I will not allow rap music to be played because it's vile garbage music in my shop or whatever it is, and you know that's all there is to it. Or I don't want to hear anybody playing REM because I don't want to hear any, you know, wuss music, and you know it's grounds for termination. I have that right to fire them.
Right.
Period. That's it. It doesn't need to become a national or international incident. None of this does. But what has happened in a time when everything needs to be exploited, blown up, shown to the center of the stage, that's what we're doing at every single turn. And this is just another example, except the shoe is now on the other foot because Sarah fucking Handlebars is a retard. And she deserves to be publicly humiliated because, as you very wisely said last week, the way she acts in front of the press corps, and I don't give a damn about the press because they're just as culpable for everything that's happening right
sure,
now.
Right.
Maybe
right.
More so because they fan the flames on a constant. She deserves whatever she gets because she's a horrible human being. Notice nobody's chasing Kelly Conwoman out of any restaurants.
Yep.
I mean, granted, she's the sea hag. I just wouldn't want her in there because she's going to frighten small children, you know?
Right. Keep them from eating. Yeah, and when they came up to Kirstjen Nielsen and started yelling at her in the restaurant, when they came up to Stephen Miller and started yelling at him at the, you know, at the restaurant, and now they're all playing the victim thing. Oh, poor us. People are being mean. Yeah, that's called consequences for your actions, dickhead. Right.
You're especially Stephen Miller. I mean, look, even though I'm one of I'm the king of the chosen people, you don't think for one second I don't want to walk up behind him and just hit him with a chair?
Yeah, I know.
Who doesn't?
Right.
Who doesn't? You know, there are people out there saying worse. Okay, you know, people are taking it to insane extremes. But he's a horrible human being.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
At least somebody's going to fling a bag of poo at him somewhere along the lines.
Right, and somebody has to let them know that this shit is not acceptable. And that's, to me, I mean, if I were in the same situation, I don't hang around in Washington, D.C., but if I did and I saw one of those people, I'd give them a load of shit, too.
Listen, the thing is this. We're adults, and even though we do this on the show and we make light of it and we make sport of everyone, it's really disgraceful how people act. And I'm being as serious as I can possibly muster right now because it's all part and parcel of this impolite society that we have now. It's a vulgar society.
Right.
Politics have become beyond vulgar. This administration is beyond vulgar, besides being completely ineffectual and irresponsible. Although, and I will say this, the ineffectuality goes to both parties. But regardless of that, you know, you've got a vulgar society. Everything you watch on TV is oversexed, over-violent, filled with hypocrisy, especially in advertising. People have just gone nuts.
Yep.
In a not funny, not cute, not charming way. Everyone is having a temper tantrum. Everybody's attitude is, my opinion is right. I want the center of the stage, as I've said before. Give me my minute in the spotlight. Nobody seems to listen to anyone and actually have a conversation. Discourse, civil discourse, has gone right down the toilet. How long it will take to try and get back to that, God only knows. Now, even though our show is meant to be lighthearted, humorous, and hopefully a place where people will find something that they can stop and think about and be reasonable about, because we bring in all perspectives, but we also like to pee on it because it's deserved.
Yeah.
You know, at least we know what we're talking about and we're reasonable people. Even if you and I were absolutely on different sides of the fence about something, you know, if you dared come and say to me, oh, Big Star wasn't as great as you say they were, well, I think a 2x4 upside the head would be in order, but it would be in a reasonable fashion. I would frame it by saying, John, I know you're having a temporary lapse of reason and sanity, so I'm going to beat the smarts back into you.
Right.
And I clobber you. That's all.
And I would expect it.
Right, and it would be done in a civilized manner, you know? But I mean, seriously, the thing is, if we were on opposing sides of some issue somewhere along the lines, and there have been a couple of times when we haven't been exact.
Right.
No two people are exact unless you're a robot. We talk about it, and we talk about it in a smart, thoughtful, presenting both sides of the – and it's not an argument. Both sides of the vision that we see whatever the topic being.
Right.
You know, that's how people have to learn how to be human again. And they're not. And this is not some sense of false politeness or anything. It's called being civil.
Yeah, and you hit it exactly right when you talked about the fact that you want our conversations to be out there for people to listen to so that they can stop and think about what's going on. And that, to me, is the center of all of the difficulty right now, is getting people to stop and think, because rational thought involves nuance and it involves explanations and it involves lofty concepts and difficult things that challenge you and force you to sit there and work them out. And nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to put in the time. You know, Charles Krauthammer died this week.
Yeah.
And honestly, I can't remember ever having a single bit of use for anything ever came out of Charles Krauthammer's mouth. Going back to the first Gulf War, I never heard him say anything that I thought of as particularly well thought out or cogent. But you have a dearth now of people who are at least even willing to put in the work to get to where he got to. And if you don't have somebody on either side of the aisle who has the time to sit down there and piece together, not just a system of beliefs, but a system of reasons why they exist, then there's no hope, because people are just going to knee-jerk react to absolutely everything. And we all know how well that works out.
Well, first of all, let's go back to one thing that you just said about, you know, it takes thought. Well, first of all, nobody wants to listen long enough to think. They all just want to knee-jerk react. Now, the other thing is, interestingly enough, about Charles Krauthammer, I did not know that he worked in the Carter and Mondale cabinets. Ironic, don't you think?
Yep.
But then again, I would have been going to the right after Carter and Mondale. The only good thing about Walter Mondale was his daughter Eleanor, one of the most gorgeous women that ever walked the planet. God, she was amazing. What a beautiful woman. But I am not a fan of Jimmy Carter by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm not a fan of Fritz Mondale either. Nice guy, but no. No, 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 no. You can see very clearly why Reagan won handily, and that's putting it nicely.
Well, right. And when it comes to somebody like Krauthammer, you know, at least I could, even if I disagreed with it and just saw not a whole lot of value in it, the value that there was it solidified why I think the way I do. Without him, you know, here's the Taoist in me coming out again. Without somebody like Charles Krauthammer, I can't rationalize my own beliefs, because I need to have something to rationalize it against.
Well, because you're thinking in the most rational, and that's the key element here, rational way possible. You're balancing yin and yang, fair, what is fair, what is seen as unfair, and trying to make sense out of the two.
Right.
But people can't have that kind of dialogue or conversation in their daily lives now. Everything has to be an argument. Everybody has to be right about something. It's beyond comprehension, which is why even though I don't really have much use for Facebook, I refuse to put anything up that is even slightly political or socially conscious. You know, I don't want to know. I don't want to have conversations with people because everybody's got a big dick on social media.
Yep.
You know, and an even bigger mouth to go with the big dick that they're going to be swinging. And you know they're going to be doing it. So why put yourself in that position? Daily life is enough of a struggle. You know, you get up, you go to work, you have to deal with things like public transportation, you know, vagrants in the streets always trying to get money off of you. You know, work is tough enough and businesses are fleeting. You know,
yeah.
I mean, daily life as we know it at our age in this moment is hard enough. I don't need bullshit from people who are taking their buzzwords and keys from these pockets of special interest groups. You know, I don't want to know. I don't care. I don't care what your politics are. You know, I'm not going to unfriend somebody or certainly cut off ties with somebody I'm actually friends with and aligned with just because of their political beliefs. I just won't, unless you are a Nazi, a member of the white supremacist party.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Where I draw certain lines. You know, I don't tolerate the intolerable, and that's part of my whole contempt for the whole left thing. You know, when they go low, we go high. Bullshit.
Yeah, right.
The reason why there's an infestation of that kind of thing is because you always bend over backwards to allow that kind of thing. The only way to stop it is to fight it.
Right. Fight it and fight it with logic and fight it with words and fight it however you can and however you have to. And yeah, it goes back to Sean Connery had the much better idea. They put one of yours in the hospital, you put one of theirs in the morgue. So
I would say Sean Connery was a much better James Bond, to which we will argue that point.
Yes, and when I say morgue, I am, of course, speaking figuratively. Don't go kill anybody.
You know, you put one of theirs in the morgue.
Yes, you have to do the accent on top of it.
Of course you have to, Money Penny.
I want to know why he was doing that same accent when he was playing a Spanish king in Highlander. It just never made any sense.
He can't do anything else.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry, yes, Sean Connery is not a great actor.
I am Castilian.
The charisma of a certain magnitude, but you know, he's kind of a one-trick pony.
Oh, I used to slam down a few McEwans while we were sitting there in Madrid back in the day.
Christ, he was Indiana Jones's father.
That's true. Yeah,
come on, it doesn't wash.
Henry Jones Jr. So, yeah, it, I don't
and
know.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at Indiana Jones and saying, no, he's a Jew. He's got Jew written all over him. He's got that look in his face.
Yeah, exactly. But no, the whole situation is bad, and it's getting worse because, like I said, nobody seems to want to take the time to think. It's not that we don't have the time. We just want to do different things with it other than putting our brains to work.
And hence, that's why our show is here, because it is a – I would like to think of us as being a sanctuary for people who just want to relax and think and be entertained. You know, we're not a comedy show. We're both intelligent, reasonable people. We're both, you know, well-schooled, well-read. We're learned men. But then again, we are of the Talmudic cloth. So my next question to you then, John, is why do we eat matzah on Passover?
Oh, God.
Baba Booey.
Yes.
Hey, so next week we're going to bring in lesbians. Ratings through the roof.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there is there's a follow-up I want to get to, because last week you told us about a fire that had happened that three local businesses right near where you live were involved in. And one of them was your Dunkin' Donuts. What's going on?
I don't know offhand if I mentioned it. I don't remember that I had suspicions as to who may have started the fire.
Yep.
As it turned out, it was indeed that person who started the fire. And he miraculously was in the hospital at the time of his arrest. And there are at least 9 different charges levied against him.
This is a homeless guy who was a problem, right?
Yes. A vagrant out front of alternately the deli next to the pharmacy, the Dunkin' Donuts, and back between the three. And he is the one who set the fire. And he has been allowed to just roam that neighborhood for the better part of the last 2 years. And now he's cost 3 businesses and people their livelihoods. You know, it's a case of because the police are, no pun intended, handcuffed by de Blasio, it's created this situation. Now, as I said before, in our neighborhood, vagrants are appearing left, right, and center.
Yep.
And this is not good. It is turning a really nice, family-oriented, fairly safe neighborhood into a no-go zone. It makes me uncomfortable. The Dunkin' Donuts pharmacy situation aside, and we don't know when they'll be reopened, but hopefully soon. There's also a park nearby, which is right across the street from where the Eric Garner incident happened. Now, that park has always been infested with drunks, drug addicts, and basic criminals. The criminal element has always been there. There was a point where the police presence was often enough that things started to get better. But ever since de Blasio's mandate to have the police back off, that park is now worse than ever before. We have now gotten to the point in this neighborhood that this Thursday night there will be an emergency meeting held over at the local police precinct. And you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to this. I'm actually attending.
Good. I can't wait to get the update on that next time we talk.
This is so out of control now. You know, when you go down the street at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, there are already bums all over the place. You know, and I'm just on my way to work. I don't need to deal with this kind of thing, you know, and I have nothing less than a scowl on my face. A morning like this morning, which was delicious, absolutely beautiful, a perfect early summer morning in New York City where it's cool and it's crisp, but yet it's warm enough that you're completely comfortable. And as soon as you make that turn to start heading down past the stores, there they all are.
You got to run the gauntlet. Yeah.
Yeah. And that puts you in an immediately bad frame of mind.
Sure.
You know, you look at the ferry terminal, it is not a homeless outreach. It is not a hotel.
Yeah, but you buried the lead because, I mean, at least while you have all of that to deal with, at least you won't have to deal with plastic drinking straws for very much longer.
Oh, well, that's right, because in Nanny City, New York, you know, the latest of de Blasio's asinine ideas is the banning of plastic drinking straws. Like this one, right here.
I got mine, too.
Yeah, but you're in Illinois right now.
That's right.
I'm in New York, so, I am vehemently breaking the law.
You're illegal.
See that, de Blasio? I got a plastic drinking straw.
I'm going to need you to stop making that motion with your hand.
You're going to go blind watching me.
That's right. Can I do it till I need glasses? I think that's really the question.
Well, we're both wearing glasses, so there we go.
Yes, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm fine with it. It's like, do whatever you want. The thing is, if we need to switch to paper straws or whatever, okay, fine. I don't care. As long as they're not those stupid things that they used to have at Disney that used to collapse whenever you try to drink out of them.
I usually don't use straws. It's only with an iced coffee. That's the only, that is my only asterisk at the end. Or, you know, if I stop at Starbucks and get a green iced tea, because every now and then I do like one of those. Those are very refreshing. Will I use a straw? Otherwise, I never use straws. Straws give you air in your stomach, so I don't need that.
Oh, okay.
I already got an. I got enough of a, you know, a dad bod. I don't really need to make things worse.
I just need to belch more, so that's why I use them.
Belch more, I'll just drink more seltzer.
That said, that's what's going on the left in New York. Meanwhile, on the right, Mike Grimm may actually be done.
From your mouth to God's ears, tomorrow is primary election day on Staten Island. So the hope is that right now Dan Donovan leads him by 7 points.
Okay.
That's not a very big margin, but still.
Be nice if he didn't even get to the general election. That'd be fine with me.
That makes two of us. Believe me, I loathe Grimm. I would like to see a reporter throw him off a balcony. Yeah. Actually,
well, he's just such a shitty human being. He's terrible.
Yeah, he's right. He's a shitty human being. He's also completely phony.
Right.
So but he paid his dues. He did his time. He didn't do enough time.
Nope.
He's a criminal. Period. Tax evasion? No. 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 5 to 7, easy. Especially when you're, quote, an elected official. I will never, ever, ever say anything good about that guy.
No, and part of his defense was, well, everybody does it. I can't be in the restaurant business and not do what everybody else does. Okay, so everybody breaks the law, so that makes it okay for you to do it. Okay, that means we need to let every pot smoker out of prison now.
Right, well, I say round them all up and put them in prison. Bunch of dope addicts. You can't walk down the streets or walk through the streets of New York without the stench of reefer being everywhere. It's ridiculous. It's really irritating.
Yeah, why is it? Why is it so bad there? This is the second time today I've heard this brought up.
Yeah, I mean, because everybody just can't seem to not get high, which tells me what kind of non-functionary society we've developed into.
Okay, well, that's it. I'm going to get high.
You know.
Hang on a second. I got to get some of
it. Well, John is getting his fix. I just that drugs are bad. Don't do drugs. Just say no.
That's right, kids.
And listen, do not pay attention to what anybody from the left has to say. If you see somebody doing drugs, especially in your family, beat them. Beat them senseless.
Yeah, that's right. And I only feel safe doing this because you can't reach me from there.
Yeah, but I can vex you because I can see you. I have that power.
There you go. So this should be an interesting broadcast from now.
So tomorrow is the primary election, and this Nimrod Max Rose is running on the Democratic side, and yeah, he'll get nowhere fast. So that being said, let us hope that at this time next week we're discussing Dan Donovan taking on, well, whomever may be running against him. I think it would be unopposed, I hope.
Yeah. Well, there is one other thing that's going on here in the city of St. Louis that's kind of interesting. Even though I'm not in the city, I'm close enough to it to know what's – I have my finger on the pulse, man. And what's going on right now
– finger is more up the ass, but let's
– Well, National Lampoon's Vacation.
Yes.
When they go over the bridge – and you see the gateway arch in St. Louis over the bridge, and he starts talking about the elevator that goes all the way up to the top and that. And the very next scene is nighttime, and they're lost in the city somewhere, and it's the honky lips scene where he gets the car spray painted and all of that. And that's unfortunately fairly accurate. and it still is, because there are large parts of the north side. Now, St. Louis is a beautiful city. Don't get me wrong. I love it here. But there are parts of the north side of St. Louis and parts of central St. Louis around Interstate 44. Well, I-70 to the north and 44 kind of cuts southwest through town that look awful. And it's unfortunate, because these are buildings that went up in like the 1880s and 1890s and forward. And they're gorgeous old buildings, and, you know, they're tough as nails, and a lot of them are still, relatively speaking, standing upright. But they're abandoned, and they got smashed in windows, and they've got boarded up doorways and windows, and it just, it's terrible, because you look at them and you can see the possibilities. And you go, okay, you know what? With a little bit of money and a little bit of effort and a lot of time, this place could actually get something going. And they could do something with these great old buildings. But nobody does. Nobody wants to spend the money, because they know that if you spend the money to rehab one of them, what you're going to have is one really nice building and a block full of crap. And nobody's going to buy it. So you spend $100,000 rehabbing a building you couldn't sell for $30,000. And that's the real holdup right now. So what the city's trying is something that was brought up by one of the aldermen. And they actually did this in Buffalo about 5 or 6 years ago. They're selling those buildings. What they do is they will lease you the building for $1 for 18 months. So you pay $1 and they give you this 18-month lease. At the end of that 18 months, you either have the building up to code or you don't. If you don't, tough, get out. If, meanwhile, you have spent those 18 months rehabbing the building, then that dollar that was your lease is now the purchase price of the property, and they sign you over the deed. So you could get one of those houses in North St. Louis for $1, plus whatever it cost you to get it up to code. The problem is, are any of them close enough to being at code to make it worthwhile to rehab the buildings? That's what nobody seems to know yet. But at least somebody's got an idea, you know? And the alternative is we don't do anything and it stays shitty looking like it is at the moment.
First of all, that sounds a lot like what went on down in Miami in an area called Wynwood.
Yep.
Which was pretty much an industrial area. Somebody started with one building and turned it into like an art gallery. And suddenly the Wynwood neighborhood became this artistic area, even though it was predominantly all industrial buildings. It wasn't residential. Now there's residential buildings that have gone up, Wynwood 25 being the first one.
Right.
Which is this ultra sleek, modern, very hotel looking. Now you've got this whole area that's been, dare I say it, regentrified.
Yeah.
But an area that was left for dead.
Tampa did the same thing in an area called Seminole Heights. So,
right.
Yeah.
Look, DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C.
Most of Memphis.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Detroit is going through a rejuvenation.
Right. You know? And they're doing a lot of the same things. They're taking those old buildings that are standing there, and in some cases they're taking old industrial buildings and turning them into apartments.
Right. And you know what? Here there have been a couple of things. Look, right down from me, about 15 minutes by car, there was an abandoned old Bell telephone building that was becoming an eyesore. What did they do? They turned it into a school.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And my, you know, when my mom lived in Baltimore, she lived in an area town in the Inner Harbor that for a long time was just falling apart, buildings and all of that stuff. And what they did, they did the same thing. She lived in a building called Tindeco Wharf, which was a fish cannery, you know, 50 years ago or 70 years ago or whatever. And they cut it into these apartments. And these were high dollar, giant apartments right on the water near, you know, across from Fort McHenry. Beautiful. And, you know, the guys who ended up doing it, because the area, because it worked, because there was other development there, because the Inner Harbor was right there, and they did the aquarium and all of that, it worked, and they made ungodly sums of money.
I'll tell you what, it would be nice to hear that they do decide to let people get in there. First of all, it should not really, and I'm speaking in idealistic terms, it should not take that long to find out what is needed to bring the buildings up to code.
Right.
If that's all you have to do is just assemble the right teams of people to go in and assess the buildings. If there's something that's beyond it's beyond destroyed and can't be repaired without thousands upon thousands, which will bankrupt you, then okay, you abandon ship.
Then flatten it, yeah.
You're going to know sooner than later.
Yep.
It's that simple.
Right.
So whether they're going to sit around and twiddle their thumbs, I hope not. I hope they take action and actually rebuild something.
Yeah.
Because it could be wonderful.
Be really nice to see. Well, and that's something that over these next few months, because Buffalo's project has been going on, I think, since 2014. And so over these next few months, we'll keep an eye on this one and see if it actually gains any kind of traction and if the mayor signs it to begin with. So
the problem with Staten Island is that what they're doing is just overbuilding here.
Yeah. And real estate's at a premium anyway.
You know, we don't need any more buildings. We've had, you know, the beauty of Staten Island is there have been so many beautiful old houses that were built to last.
Yep.
And at times there have been people who have just moved out, moved away, died. Nobody took over the house. They leveled these gorgeous old houses and put up these shitty, three and four semi-detached houses clustered together.
Uh-huh. Modern-day row houses.
And spit, and they're just god-awful, boring, useless. And, you get these shitty people moving in, and it just ruins the complexion of a neighborhood,
right,
which is what we're all about.
Yeah. Well, and what Seminole Heights did was, I mean, and I don't even think they meant to do it. It just kind of naturally happened in this area that used to be nothing but drug dealers and hookers in Tampa, was that, a couple of families of 22-year-old idealistic college kids came in right after they got out of college, got decent jobs. They moved into Seminole Heights because their real estate was cheap. They could get a house for 50 grand, spend 10 or, even 20 fixing it up and have a gorgeous old style Floridian, whatever. And they did it. And that's what really kicked off that campaign. And it just sort of naturally built to the point where the developers started noticing. And then they started putting money in and it just snowballed. And now it's great.
Right. Because, of course, the developers are all waiting like a pack of wolves.
Right.
They want to see the first people make that inroads.
Yep.
Ooh, we got to get in on the ground floor and profit.
And, maybe this idea of selling those houses for a buck or at least a couple of them, we'll do it. We'll get that ball rolling. I just, fingers crossed.
Yeah, really. I would love to hear a positive follow-up on that.
Yeah, be nice. So with that, I do believe we're up to the In Our Head segment of the program. And this time, I'm going to go back to something we talked about on the air today, because there was a story about a couple that he proposed during a concert. And the concert was Lionel Richie. Now, I don't think we've ever talked about Lionel Richie, so I have no idea what your opinion of Lionel Richie is. Let's start there. Are you a fan at all of Lionel Richie?
No.
Okay.
Solo, no way. Brick House, hell yes.
Well, there you go. Yeah, the solo work is just...
Absolutely. You separate him from the Commodores, neither one work.
Yep. Right, yeah, Smokey Robinson with or without the Miracles is fine. Lionel Richie.
That's Smokey Robinson. The Miracles, look, Love Machine.
Yeah.
Masterpiece, and that's not Smokey.
Right, right. And so, yeah, but with Lionel Richie, I think you're right. I mean, when he gets his solo stuff, to me, was as milquetoast as a lot of what McCartney did after that run of singles.
No. Do not do that. Do not do that. Retract. Immediately retract.
All right, fine. I'll take it back. But
now listen and listen carefully. Lionel Richie is about as interesting as Phil Collins.
Okay, there you go. That works.
That's what we're talking about. You go from a piece of shit like Against All Odds by Phil Collins to a piece of shit like Say You, Say Me.
And there's your connection, because the chord structure in Say You, Say Me was ripped off directly from A Day in the Life.
No comment.
But hang on. So my fantasy about this proposal that took place at the concert was that Lionel Richie would play what I consider to be the worst song in his canon, and in fact may very well be the worst love song ever.
That's, hello?
No, that one's right up there, but he topped it in my mind with Endless Love.
You know I don't mind crossing you. I hate that song so much.
I gotta vomit now.
And, I mean, the movie bombed. So the fact that the song had such life, had such staying power, and it wouldn't go away for years, it was there, and it was, I mean, it dominated pop radio that summer, and it just, it was either that, or it was that other stupid movie song that Chicago did when Peter Cetera started singing, and it was like one or the other, and it was just like, kill me, just kill me now, you're torturing me with love songs. But Endless Love had something that was so completely unredeeming about it that that I can't, you know, even starting to when I was picturing it in my head, I had to stop myself from thinking about it because I kept hearing that song. Even that's the scene in Happy Gilmore out on the ice. Funny bit. Okay, I get it, playing Endless Love, but I just can't stand it because that song is playing. So I don't know why it is. I mean, love songs in general have that problem because after a while it's like, oh, yeah, okay, fine. You're overwrought. I get it. Sure. And even if you've been in that situation, there's just something about making it that sappy that just immediately makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. So let's talk about, we always talk about the best of things. Let's talk about some of the worst love songs that have been out there. Just the ones that are so dry heave inducing that you can't reach the button on the radio fast enough.
First of all, let me just say that was one of the most eloquent moments of your philosophizing that I've ever had the pleasure of being. That is why I love what we do so much, because I get to sit back and let you drive and listen to you in such a nice way. But it isn't dry heave inducing. It's pure projectile vomit for me.
Okay.
Somebody who I absolutely love put out two of the songs I despise with an unbridled passion. And I don't know if you can interpret them as love songs, but I think they are. Bette Midler, The Rose.
Oh, yeah.
Despise The Rose, and I Want to Kill Whoever Wrote Wind Beneath My Ass, because that fucking song irks the shit out of me. From that movie Bitches, fuck that noise, yo.
Did you ever know that you're my hero? And everything I would like to be. I can fly.
Papa Cat.
Yeah, I mean,
those two really foul, wretched songs. What's that stupid? Now, Against All Odds. Another reason to hate Phil Collins.
Yep.
Period. What's the friggin' song from White Nights?
Oh wow.
See, it all falls in the same bracket of just sappy, soulless, weedy love songs completely made for radio.
Right, right. And that was the unfortunate part about it, is that because, I don't even know why it is, but those songs seem to be the ones that in any given canon are the ones that sell like crazy. And I could never fathom why. I mean, what is it about hearing Endless Love on the radio that made somebody go out and buy an album, for God's sake?
Look, I just called to say I love you. It's just impardonable.
It's embarrassing. It is embarrassing.
And it's also sophomoric. It is so un-Stevie Wonder. It's like, dude.
Right.
Are you diabetic now? Because this is just sugary sap.
Yeah.
This is awful, you know? I mean, look. Yeah, Pauly Mac's come up with some real clunkers in his day. I mean, I'm not exactly a fan of Yesterday.
No.
But, okay. Okay, we'll give that one a pass because it was a first. Not a love song, but still, I'll never forgive him for it. Ebony and Ivory.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of all the protest songs you could write, first of all, racism is bad. Thanks, Paul. And second of all, really, that's the example you're going to make is, well, it works on my keyboard. How come white people and black people can't get along?
It's like, Paul, you're going back into Mary Had a Little Lamb territory.
But that was the same album. That was the same. Wasn't that the same album that had Take It Away on it?
That's the same album that has The Pound Is Sinking.
Right.
It's Ballroom Dancing.
It's a great piece of work. And yet.
That one song that ruins everything that he ever... That was the straw that broke the camel's back. I have not bought a new release from the man since that album because I don't forgive. I don't forgive.
Yeah.
I don't forgive. But let me think if there are other songs that just I can't listen to them because there's such god-awful. Well, it makes me not love. It makes me hate.
Let's delve right into the wedding receptions because at my first marriage, we actually had our first dance, and I should have known something was wrong right there, to that Billy Joel song that everybody plays at their wedding.
Just the way you are.
Yeah, yeah, that one.
Need to know that you will always be the same old someone that I knew.
And like I said, I should have known something was wrong right there. That one, Longer by Dan Fogelberg. You know, longer than there be. Yeah, right.
No. You'll probably have to insert clips of some of these goddamn songs.
Yeah, I know.
Because last week we did our first show without any musical clips.
Yeah, now I'm just torturing myself with them. And yeah, anything by a boy band where they try to get all sweet.
Okay, I don't really know the song. I think I heard it once, and I said, this is what people bought? What the fuck is wrong with society? I think it was Boys to Men, some fucking song called End of the Road or End of the Line or End of My Dick. I don't know what it's called. End of My Shit Trail? I don't know, but it's some fucking song that was on the charts forever, and it was just like the lamest, most untuneful pile of shit I'd ever heard.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck is wrong with people? Yeah. Even in the early 90s, hence, you know, I got away from any kind of music in the 90s. You know, I am a 90s denier, you know? 90s stopped in 91.
Yeah.
You know? That's it. After Shiny Happy People ruined everything, that was it. Because after that fucking song came along, then came goddamn Nirvana and the goddamn assholes who did grunge and, you know, goddamn shit music like, you know, Everybody's Sweat Now and, you know, the CNC Cola Factory music and just all this shit that the 90s spewed forth. Nothing was even remotely listenable in the 90s until Blur put out Park Life. And if you don't agree with me, fuck you all. Anyway,
that's a great way to leave it. So from love songs right to screw everybody.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know,
just cause you to really vomit-inducing love songs that are so bad that there was no rhyme or reason for them, and that all of the artists that perform these songs should be in prison for crimes against humanity.
Yeah, and by the way, the Separate Lives was the one that was on the White Knight soundtrack. That's the other Phil Collins song. So put them in the comment section, and we will be back with more fun stuff next time we do this thing. And Rob Ross, always a pleasure, my man.
Yes, indeed, my brother. And as always, if the floodwaters don't rise, I will see you next week. Have a good one, man.